Gaslighting is unreal at this point.
Seriously.
It's right up there with the gambling and the degeneracy, the OnlyFans epidemic, and that's one symptom after another. Taking the penny out of circulation, that's the first, like, extraordinarily tangible daily life sign and symptom of hyperinflation.
Welcome back to the Bitcoin Nova. Today, I have Asa Noah here with me from Bitcoin Art Magazine. I'm just so excited for what you're doing with this for Bitcoin culture. And thank you so much for joining me.
Thank you for having me up here today. It's an honor to be here. And yeah, feeling grateful. It's Monday and we're getting after it.
Yes, Monday. And you're nice and cozy. You've got your warm jacket on, your hoodie, and your anonymous.
My little studio here is in my garage, basically. So, it's takes a little minute to heat up in the mornings. So,
Yes. Where do you live? Or
I'm out on the West Coast. So
West Coast.
Yeah,
okay.
Yeah.
All right. Cool. And I see the Bitcoin Art Magazine's behind you in the background.
This is my packing table for shipping out magazines and artworks and other things. So I thought maybe I should try and put something on it when I'm doing podcasts to make it a little bit more of an interesting backdrop.
Very nice. We are all Satoshi art behind you. Is that also from some of the artists that are featured, like that kind of art?
That's one of my own paintings.
That's your own painting.
Yeah.
I love that.
Thank you.
That is super, super cool. So does that mean we are all, or Satoshi is actually the Japanese writing there? Is that Japanese? Okay. That is, amazing.
Yeah.
Great work. That's a really, I saw that art piece on the website. I think you had some of those on there and I really like them.
Yeah. I think I have prints up on there. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. So I'm super excited to hear about the magazine. I heard about it. I saw some friends order it. And it's the Genesis edition, which, I mean, it's the beginning of something, you know, it's something new. It's, there we go. That's the magazine right there. And it's more like, it doesn't feel like it's not a magazine like a traditional magazine, right? It's a print. It's a keepsake, really.
It is. It's a collectible.
Collectible.
So, you know, the idea with it was, I think more of like a fine art journal than your, you know, average magazine. So it's a piece, it's a work of art in itself. As far as like the format and how we're going to do it in moving into the future and how it evolves, I'm not sure, but like to start, you know, it's just basically a collection of artist features. So I'll kind of show, you know, it's like, we've got some advertisements in the magazine. So shout out to all of our sponsors. And then we're also doing
a list of sponsors too. You got some big companies, you know, behind you guys. So
yeah, we've got we got Time Chain Calendar and SAS Mining, and we got Bitcoin Audible and Bull Bitcoin, and we got some other good ones. So we did some ads in the magazine, but they're very nicely done advertisements. I tried to make them all as artistic as possible, so it doesn't like really, it's not like disruptive. At least I feel like they're not disruptive to reading the magazine. And they're all vetted companies by myself and Kisa, who's my senior editor, author of the simplest Bitcoin book ever written. So we didn't just, you know, offer advertising to anybody. They're all Bitcoin only companies and ones that we would recommend to our friends and family or use ourselves. And our goal is to stay very principled with who we offer advertising to and not just, you know, take the cake on anybody that'll throw money at us. We really want to, you know, stand behind who we take on as sponsors and who advertise with us. So we're also doing a hardcover book, and we have two options of that. And our patrons edition is actually sold out, which is really exciting. Huge shout out to everybody who ordered one of those. But we still have a bunch of hardcover books. that we're doing that are on the website. They're limited edition of 121, and then the patrons edition is limited edition of 21. It's going to be a little extra fancy, but the hardcover books are going to be really beautiful, the 121s, and those won't have any advertisements in them. So those are just, it's more of like a fine art coffee table book. It's got all of the artists, all of the artwork, and then it's got the words from the artists and, you know, their descriptions and art descriptions, artist bios, and so forth.
Oh, nice. But it's, that you showcase their, you know, the artists too.
Yeah. So the magazine itself, the way it's, we've set it up is kind of, we've got a, you know, artist title, mm-hmm. bio description, and then full page artwork. And so we've got over, I think over 70 full pages of art. Mm-hmm. So I really tried to lean, you know, just art heavy, uninterrupted. So yeah,
it's a history of the culture. It feels like you're just documenting and showing, you know, artists during the time of this change and transformation in the world. And it's really nice, because it's like a little history book of the art that was coming out and the culture and the movement that was happening. So, you know, it feels really special. You know, it's not just, again, your average magazine. It's a collectible. And is there going to be a certain number of this Genesis edition, or will you continue making them for some time, or when will part two come out, or how does that work?
So we were going to do unnumbered on the standard magazine, which the standard magazine is very nice. It's very high end, very high quality materials. Like I was saying, more of an art journal than your run of the mill magazine. But we decided we're going to limit it to 1,720 copies. So that's what we printed on our first print run. So there will only ever be 1,720 Genesis editions of Bitcoin Art Magazine. We have 210 that have gold foil on the cover, and those are cost a little bit more. And so they're like, you know, the idea is like a little bit more of a collectible. And then we have the 121 hardcover books, and then 21 patrons edition hardcover books. But we did decide to limit the base issue or the standard issue magazine to 1,720 copies. So even the standard issue here is going to be quite rare and quite limited in its supply. We may release some sort of online digital subscription so that you can, you know, so that it can be there archived forever. And that is definitely, you know, a big part of the goal with this is just to archive a bunch of the art that's happening in the space right now. We're not really featuring any NFTs. We're really focusing on the physical artworks with an emphasis on fine art. We will be doing some collectibles, and we will be doing an edition one and an edition two and so forth. We actually have got all of the artists lined up for the next two editions. Wow. So, and half of edition three. So the goal is to do it four times a year.
Okay.
And we will see if there's the demand for that. So worst case scenario, we do it one or two times a year. Mm-hmm. But so far the support's just been amazing. And so I'm feeling really confident we'll be able to do this very regularly.
That's so nice to hear. I mean, just to know that you have support, you have, you know, people that want this, you know, they love the idea. And how do you find these artists? You already have the next two editions ready to go as far as who's going to be in it and what art pieces. So how do you have people that search this out? Do they reach out to you?
So we've got a bunch of people now that we've, you know, kind of been, you know, working on our outreach that have reached out, but I got pretty much all of the people. I've got like 80% of the people so far. I did just a kind of open call a while back last year, and it was like, I'm going to make a Bitcoin art magazine. Who wants to be in it? And I got hit up by a whole bunch of people just on Twitter and Noster. And then I reached out to a bunch of people myself. So I've been making Bitcoin art for about 4 years now. And I've done a bunch of the conferences, and shout out to like the gallery Scarcity's hosted. So I've been in a bunch of those, and I've just gotten to know a lot of the artists, and I kind of just track the space and see who's making what. And so, you know, I think I've been doing it. I'm not super OG. I'm not an OG Bitcoiner, and I'm not an OG Bitcoin artist. Like, you know, somebody like some of the guys like Crypto Graffiti, Cypherpunk Now, Fractal Encrypt, who have been doing it, Madex, who have been doing this for, you know, many years, longer than I have. But I've been around long enough, I think, that I've established, you know, a level of trust with the Bitcoin art space, which is can be quite niche and,
yeah,
you know, protected in some ways. So I've been around just long enough to have gotten pretty much all of the best artists in Bitcoin to get on board and support me doing this. So shout out to all of the artists making this possible.
That's so crazy. So you've been in it for the last 4 years. You've made these connections. You go to the conferences, you meet these people, and they do usually, like, I went to my first Bitcoin conference in Vegas last year, and I saw the art, you know, set up when you first walk in,
like
a whole section with art there. And so were you there too in Vegas, I'm assuming?
I was in Vegas. Yeah. Yeah.
Okay. Yeah. So it was really, you know, it was really nice looking at all that art and seeing it. So you get to be exposed to a lot of this stuff when you go to these conferences. And even though you're not super OG, you've been going to conferences for the last 4 years. And, you know, it took me years to go to my first one. You know, it took me until last summer, or last spring, to go to Vegas. So, yeah, but you meet so many great people. You get inspired to do these things. So how did it start? Like, how did your journey start with Bitcoin? You said you're not super OG, so when did you get into it, and how long before you said, I'm going to not only create a magazine, but what led to the creation of the magazine? Kind of, was it being around Bitcoin that kind of inspired you to, you know, put something together?
Yeah, so I first found out about Bitcoin back in 2017. I was working on a hemp farm, and a friend of mine paid me for some work I had done in Bitcoin, and unfortunately I spent it. I treated it as money, and which I feel like is, you know, on the one hand kind of cool, it's kind of based. I was like, this is like digital money, like, all right, I think I've kind of like heard of this or something, let me look it up, like, yeah, you cool, you can pay me in that. And then you know, and unfortunately I didn't like research it deeper, or I didn't understand it on a deeper level, and so I was like, oh, this is just money, I'm gonna spend it. I gotta, you know, do stuff. Life goes on. And I think we all have that story of having, or many of us have that story of having wished we had have hodled from the very beginning, right? And then I was kind of in and out over the next few years, or the next couple years, and kind of like I researched it, you know, studied a bit more, started to understand it a bit better, had a big bag of shit coins. Kind of sold everything, you know, made some money, was like, I should buy some more Bitcoin, kind of bought back in, kind of was, you know, in and out, and didn't really have that aha moment until 2021, when a good friend of mine was like, you gotta watch some of these videos and like check this out and kind of like check out Bitcoin again. It was actually a friend of mine who I had introduced to Bitcoin back in 2017, and they like went pretty, you know, they studied it more in depth than I did. And so 2021, I think they saw an auction where Brecky von Bitcoin had sold a sculpture, and I was making art, but not Bitcoin art. I was doing more geometric work, and they were like, hey, you should make some Bitcoin art and you should like study Bitcoin more. And so I did. And I think it was after, you know, experiencing that kind of COVID era of just tyranny and feeling the tyranny really affect me in my life for the first time, you know, with lockdowns, not being able to travel, and just the overreach of the, you know, overlord cabal's kind of, you know, the whole situation. So I come from more of like a liberal, progressive kind of tree hugging hippie childhood background, and you know, I swung very much to the right, I think, much more conservative, but much more ultimately libertarian, anarcho-capitalist, and so forth. Specifically during COVID, just seeing, you know, it's kind of like necessity is the mother of invention, and like Max Payne brings the adoption. And when you see your freedoms and rights like, well, at your doorstep, or, you know, at your local airport or whatever it is, you know, being infringed upon, you get a lot more radicalized than when you're kind of just, you know, peacefully going on and politics and all the crazy shit's happening. You know about it. I've known about all the conspiracy theories since a young age, and like being more of a hippie, like always ate organic food and like, you know, a lot of the health stuff and things. Like I knew all of that. I knew things weren't as they seem and things were broken and wrong with the monetary system, but I didn't know exactly what. I was a little bit younger during the Occupy Wall Street thing. It was kind of far away. But I knew about that. So, you know, but I didn't know that Bitcoin was a solution for almost all of these issues that we have on Earth today.
Crazy. You know? Felt like you were primed to learn about Bitcoin because you were already that type of person who just knew that there was more going on behind the scenes, but it was the missing puzzle piece.
Absolutely. So by the time, you know, so after the COVID experience, I was, you know, ready for a solution. And so I dived into the rabbit hole, and I've been, you know, engaging in Bitcoin, you know, making Bitcoin art on Bitcoin Twitter, I was on Noster Domus sub 10K. And so I've been in Bitcoin every day since 2021 now. So yeah, and then I think being an artist to the inception of the magazine, a lot of people had talked about making a Bitcoin art magazine. And in 2024 at Nashville, I actually had a long conversation with Rebel Money. Big shout out to Rebel Money, a great Bitcoin artist, about making a magazine, because he and a couple of the other artists had made like a little gallery catalog for their artworks at the conference. And so I was really inspired by what they had made. I was like, this is so cool. Like, it's like a catalog, magazine-y, zine-y type of, you know, material that's like featuring all the art, you know, your guys' artworks in it. I was like, you know, what about like doing like a full one? And him and I just, he ended up getting busy, I think, with the Art of Freedom project that he was doing, I guess still is kind of doing, with Flo Montoya, another great Bitcoin artist. But him and I didn't really like continue anything thereafter. And so about a year later, I was like, I'm just going to do it. And so I just did it.
I love that. I love when you just make a choice, you know?
Yeah. I think being an artist, having already been making Bitcoin art and being a Bitcoin artist myself, was pretty, you know, key in being able to bring this to life. So just as far as trust with the other artists and people taking it seriously, it's really hard in this space to come in and do something new with how much, you know, scammery and shitcoinery there is. I feel like you kind of got to earn your marks, as in any field in life, before people will give you the time of day or reply to a DM or whatever it is, you know. So
it's great that you, you know, have done so much. Like you've gone a long way in the time that it took to become a Bitcoiner and do this. You know, I just think it's something that stretched far and wide. People have heard of it. People have seen it. You know, it's reached a lot of Bitcoiners, and then hopefully by people having it in their homes and, you know, somebody taking a peek at it, you know, it can kind of just be like invoking curiosity and sort of maybe planting a seed for somebody to think about what is this thing and why did they have an art magazine about this thing at their house. So I just think it's amazing that, you know, that you did this, that you came so far. And how do your friends look at you, like the ones that really got you to do more Bitcoin art? Are they just as much of a Bitcoiner as you are now, or have you surpassed them?
No, they are. They're still a full on Bitcoiner now too, as much as I am, if not more. So yeah.
That's amazing. How do they feel about what you're doing? Are they?
They're stoked. Yeah. They're super stoked. Yeah.
That's awesome. And how hard was it for you to, you know, going from being an artist, now you're thinking, I'm going to make this high end magazine, you know, this collectible, you know, was it hard for you to go from making art to creating this book, sort of? I mean, it's really a collectible. It's not like just like a flimsy thing.
Yeah. So I've always been, I guess, I think, I don't know if the term is kind of like autodidact, but I never went to any school as a child. Well, I didn't go to a whole lot of conventional school. I've tried out almost every kind of school that there is, Montessori, Sudbury, private, public, charter, you name it, Waldorf briefly, but my parents never forced me to stay. They told me going to school was my choice. And if I wanted to go, I had to deal with it, and that I was in, you know, that it was their rules and so forth, like the school's rules. And I just had to basically behave. So and they were like, and if you don't want to keep going, you can drop out and basically homeschool / free school run around. So
wow.
I would get kind of bored and I would be like, I want to go to school. And I would go for maybe 3 or 4 months. And then I'd be like, this is bullshit. I'm over it. And they would just let me drop out. So I kind of did that all through elementary. You know, a few months here, a few months there, take a year off. And then I did all of seventh grade. I actually completed a full year and my only full year of school. And then I skipped eighth grade, did a semester of ninth grade and was like, fuck this shit. And I just started working. So I've been working since I was like 14 years old and have done all kinds of different jobs and odds and ends, you name it. So I would say I got an education from reading books and from going to trade schools of a couple different types.
That's really amazing, because usually I hear a lot about homeschooling now from Bitcoiners, and I know a few people in real life that homeschool their kids, and their kids are really smart. You know, it just seems like not to be on that traditional course of education, you end up learning more because it's stuff that you want to learn. You don't have to learn so much of the stuff that they just force on you. But that's what I love, that there's someone that's in their adult part of their life, you know, that could look back and say like, this is what I did. And it's freeing. It's really, just to be able to, I don't know, to just learn what you want to learn and follow whatever passions you have. You know, it's really great.
Absolutely. I mean, school is at least like 95% of conventional schooling. It's just like state sponsored indoctrination. So it's, you know, it's fucking daycare for big kids. You know, there's absolutely nothing that school teaches you that you can't learn elsewhere. And the majority of what school teaches you is to like shut up and sit down and be a slave. So, I mean,
your friends that told you to get more into Bitcoin, were they homeschooled, or were they friends you met when you went to school for a time, or where did you meet those friends?
No, just that my friend who told me to make Bitcoin art was just an old friend just from life, but they are of an alternative background as well. Mm-hmm. So yeah. It's these days, you know, anything that you want to learn with it, you know, thanks in part a lot to the internet, you can just look stuff up. How do I do XYZ? And you're going to probably, if you have basic logic and, you know, basic common sense, you're going to learn how to be able to do it probably faster than a school is going to be able to teach you. Mm-hmm. You see that with stuff like software, like the best coders and, you know, tech entrepreneurs, a lot of them, their schooling was minimal, or they didn't go to, you know, they didn't maybe necessarily study the field that they work in and so forth. I mean, you know, software and just I think the hive mind of humanity is just moving so much faster than like these archaic indoctrination institutions can actually keep up with. And so there's a lot of fields now where it's moving faster than the schools can write curriculums to teach stuff. Mm-hmm. And so, you know, I would say that probably with AI right now is a perfect example. Like, there's probably no school you can go to that can teach you AI faster than just self-teaching it on the internet by using AI and watching YouTube videos and following certain, you know, AI frontiersmen on social media and so forth. Mm-hmm. So it's just, I think that, you know, I'm not like a wildly successful individual. But I would say that I'm probably a lot more successful than like a lot of people who went to school and have full on degrees, you know, all the way up to master's degrees and so forth. So yeah. I think that if you can read and you have basic comprehension, then you really don't need to go to school. And it really is just more of a daycare that's unfortunately necessary for a lot of people in the world today, because both parents have to work, so there isn't somebody to watch the kid, so they take the free daycare that the state gives to watch the kids. And it's actually a net negative on those kids. But what's interesting is if you look back like 100 years ago, there was no such thing as school anywhere like in the world. Like school was like a few like of the like, you know, lords and lordesses' kids maybe went to some kind of school or had some tutor from the monastery like teach them in their castle or something. But like for like 99.99% of human existence, at least written history as we know it, nobody went to school. You just learned how to do things usually by watching your parents or other people in the community or the village or the town do them, or you went to some sort of trade school and you learn from the local blacksmith. So this whole like notion of like going and everybody learning this like same subset of basic stuff is very new to human society, and it's clearly very ineffective. And So I mean, yeah.
even with my like, I'm similar to you. I started working when I was 12, you know. I started working on and the weekends at a family salon, and it was one of those things where, you know, it taught me a lot just being around people and just not, and like breaking out of my comfort zone and doing things I'm uncomfortable with, sort of. But also just once I eventually went to trade school myself, I went to beauty school. I even getting done with that, I didn't know anything. You had 2 years of this thing, and then I learned more just from doing it. You know, you learn more from the action and from the experience and the time you spend doing the thing. So it's like, you're just spending this time in school to pass the written test or whatever it is, or just to spend the money on it, you know, just because the state says you need this license. But I didn't finish there knowing a single thing more than I did, until I started actually doing the job. So many kids go to college, and, you know, I've heard the term, like, people say your degree just means that your checks went through, you know, you're pretty much just paid for the college, and you can really just, you know, skate by and sort of cheat and just get average grades and just graduate. You know, it's not like, and then by the time you get on the job, somebody who's been maybe interning there for longer is way ahead of you, and you have this degree and you don't know anything about the real world.
Absolutely. I mean, you combine all of that with the fact of like the grad school, like it's just turned into a money making thing. So it's like, okay, you got this degree. Well, like, hey, do you want to now like get the next one? And it's interesting. And I wonder if I wonder if there's any studies out there, like what studies would show if you like really looked at it and you compared, like you're saying, someone who's been interning or has just been just working, who just started as a cleaning the freaking toilets or sweeping or at the front desk or whatever it is, you know, just janitorially started at the same time you start going to school for something that's in the same field, and like who progresses faster. Cause I mean, there's so many kids and people right now who like graduate with like bachelor's or master's degrees and like they can't get a job. Mm-hmm. And it's like, you're saying the person who's just been interning has far more knowledge on whatever it is. Now, of course, there's certain stuff that you do need to go to school for. I don't like argue that. Like if you want to be a brain surgeon or something, like you really should need to go to school. There's, you know, if you want to be like a rocket scientist, you probably should go and spend time at a university that is studying like astrophysics or whatever, propulsion and full on engineering level stuff where you need to know specific things that have been built upon for many years. But I mean, even with that stuff these days, you see like there's a lot of tech companies and things and stuff like SpaceX that are like popping up, and it's like, you know, if you walked into SpaceX and you just knew a lot of, because you loved rockets and you just knew a lot about jet propulsion, like are they going to hire you, you know, on the merit of like having a degree or just like being able to do the job well?
Right.
And so, you know,
I think
even stuff that is complex.
Yeah. It's becoming more like, yeah, you're right. If it is complex, you wonder if the world is shifting where, hey, it's sort of like an ability, like a test of your abilities to say, hey, this is your interview. Can you, can you get the job? Like, would you be able to do these things? And then if they see that you're able and somebody with a degree isn't, even though they know the book stuff, it could be just like, it's not necessary, you know, as time goes on with technology and what you can get done. And yeah, for you being able to create something and just figure it out with what's available to you to learn from is amazing. I mean, you could learn to do anything, like you said, you know, so, yeah. It just makes it, you know, even for me as a parent, I just think, yeah, unless my kids have a clear idea of, yeah, I want to be a doctor, or, you know what I mean? You need to do these certain things. You can just do anything really and find a path there and actually not need this degree is where I'm going to with it. But, you know, just when you were growing up though, did you need to take tests to show that you passed certain grade levels, or did you just, was it your parents just saying, hey, you should probably know these, you know, how does that even work?
Yeah, my experience of it was pretty like just fluid. I think my parents didn't there was no like, I did the SATs in like sixth grade and I scored like a 12th grade reading comprehension and like writing comprehension. So like that was like a state, you know, given test that I did. And I just like in like reading and writing, basically, I just like blew my peers out of the water. And then like math and science, I was like average, maybe a little under average. I was right around average. Like I wasn't, you know, doing crazy like algebra or something. Like it wasn't like I was like, I didn't get like an F, right? Like I did like pretty much average. And that was like having not been in full school from first to sixth grade. That was like a few months of third grade and like a few months of fourth grade. I think I skipped fifth grade and then I did like a few months of sixth grade. Mm-hmm. And so I think when they saw that, they were kind of like whatever they've been teaching the other kids is clearly bullshit, because like our kid is like not been in school. And they weren't forcing any kind of like homeschool curriculum. Like I mean, you know, I think my mom tried, but I would be like, fuck that shit. And so it was, you know, I wasn't studying the same, like I wasn't studying the same stuff. I was just living life. But yeah, I taught myself.
You know that your tests were passing people up, or even the stuff that she thought maybe you weren't getting enough of, you were even with people. So it's like, he hasn't even been doing this, so it's like, I can't be mad, you know, they're still doing very well. I am back with Asanoa. We had a little technical issue last time, but we are back. So we are going to finish up our conversation.
Yeah, I think my power went out like our mid call, and then it took a little while to come back. And so,
and I think I had another guest after, so we couldn't finish the same thing. and then, you know, kids, I have kids and stuff. So I'm like, oh no, I got to go do parent things. So I wanted to talk now about, you know, this photo. Because I saw this online. This was super cool. So I just want you to tell us about it. Where the heck? Sorry, I don't even know how to share stuff. Okay.
You're good.
All right. So can you tell us about this? This is so cool. So you were able to give a copy of the magazine to Michael Saylor.
This is very funny that you bring this up. I kind of let it ride. This is an AI photo.
Oh my God. I was like, this actually happened. See, I'm falling. Oh. Now I'm like the people that I make fun of that fall for all the AI stuff.
Dang. No, what's funny is how many people I think fell for it. So,
oh my gosh.
And, if you zoom in on the title there, it's pretty clearly AI, but it's just
you're right. Oh my gosh.
If you zoom in on the Genesis edition, so it's I have a lot of mixed feelings about AI. I think as many of us do.
Yeah.
You gotta zoom in. Yeah, I try not to post too much AI stuff. Just because it's slop, but every now and then, you know, you can't help but make you something or the other. And so I posted that, and it was crazy though, like how many people who are like, you know, just I think we're it's and it's just a testament to like and a good reminder for all of us to not believe everything we see online, especially with a lot of the, you know, the crazy news and the, you know, some of the things coming to light recently right now on Twitter, and you know how much of what we're seeing is real and not real. And so
you got me.
It's a good reminder, and it's a manifestation. The photo was manifestorial for getting a copy in Sailor's hands. So I am gonna get a copy in his hands at some point at an event somewhere.
Give
him a copy. Will I get a photo like that? Will I be able to recreate it? I don't know, but I sure hope so.
That's incredible. And I totally feel like it's really, it's very funny that you got me with that today, that I decided to wear my paranoid Bitcoin anarchist shirt. And I wasn't being paranoid about that photo when I saw it. I was just, I believed it. I'm like, you got me. I thought I'm super paranoid. And, but that just shows you, like text is very important. Like with AI photos, you could zoom in and you could see that it doesn't look real, or there's misspelled letters, or, you know, that's a really great way to distinguish. So can you talk as far as being, you know, the creator of Bitcoin Art Magazine, you know, you have actual physical art printed in the magazine, and the term that you use, the AI slop. So is it just because people just generate all kinds of stuff and, you know, that's what that means, just people posting not human made stuff, you know, just things that are like defined slop for people?
I think that what we've seen is an ocean of slop. And it's just quickly made. You know, AI generation. So the AI and the AI has gotten a lot better now, but over the last couple of years, like it hasn't been very good. You know, it's starting to do hands and things and writing a lot better than it ever has before. And, you know, it'll probably be like 6 months or a year until we're getting stuff that's, you know, Even to those of us who are inspecting stuff closely are going to not be able to tell the difference. Like, it's becoming imperceptible. So will that still be considered slop if it was made from AI? I don't know. You know, there's a lot of questions right now that I don't think anyone has the answer to. But I would say, you know, slop is anything that was quickly made using AI. And it's really interesting. I think there's a race to the bottom in many things and everything in one way or another, when we're in a fiat system that's on the, you know, it's kind of gone over the peak and we're on the downtrend currently. So societally as a civilization here on Earth. And so you see a lot of slop in all kinds of things. It's not just AI slop, but I mean, you know, cheap construction, cheap, you know, track homes, building materials, it's slop. A lot of the food out there is just slop. You know, pretty much anything that's being created as fast and as cheaply as possible, I would say you could call it slop. So
I like that. You could use, you know, could go into all different parts of your life, really. Yeah. Anything that's not high quality, you know, anything that is cheap or quick to make. And that's why it's like, even though, you know, people are creating stuff and they're thinking, you know, they put time into this. Really, how much time do you put into it if it's just AI generation? But I love that you're tying it together with food and, you know, materials and, you know, things that you buy for anything, home, whatever.
Absolutely. I mean, we've had there's been a ocean of slop for the consumer slop, right? So like Walmart and Amazon for years now, and I think we're just seeing that in some ways we're just seeing that digitally, you know. So we're seeing it's a digital slop is the category that AI falls into. But I mean, and not to say there isn't amazingly well-made AI content out there, because there is. Recently, I've seen some videos that were just mind-blowing, and people took a lot of time and effort to create them. So, you know, I think that AI can be used as a tool to craft very interesting and well-made things, whether they're photos or videos, artwork, or, you know, commentary, music videos. I mean, there's some AI songs that are, I mean, they're damn near emotionally moving. And so it's really interesting seeing some of those and being like, oh, wow, like that's actually like really good. Like that.
There's creativity behind it, right?
What'd you say?
There's creativity behind it and emotion, you know. I think just different things that make you feel emotional, like the lyrics can be, or the you know, just the feeling, just like the meaning behind the song. You know, it's not just words put on, you know, into you know, sound. You know, it's just actually there's meaning. You know, and I think that's why it hits people. And you're right. Like I've noticed that too with some of the, you know, songs recently. Some of the Bitcoin, you know, my Bitcoin friends have made some Bitcoin music, and it's really good. Like some of it is really, but you know, they put time. You know, they, like the people that made this stuff, they put really a lot of time into it to create it the way they visualized it, you know. So but I think, yeah, you're right. Anybody who takes an 8-second, you know, Grok video, you know, and posts it, just like a quick animation, is like, this is art, you know. It's like, well, you know, you didn't really spend time creating that art, you know. It's like fast food over the art world.
Yeah. It's really interesting, and it's part of the reason that we're not doing, well, there's a few reasons, but one of the reasons we're really only focusing on physical artwork in Bitcoin Art Magazine right now is just there. I don't even know how to begin. Well, for one, we don't support NFTs and, you know, any sort of shitcoin marketing schemes, but you know, just the digital art is in itself, like that whole landscape is going to change a lot right now because AI is just fully merging into that, and it brings in the question, you know, a lot of different questions that are currently unanswerable, and trying to curate something like that, I don't even know where one would start. So I think, you know, things will balance themselves out as we move forward here, as far as like digital art and using AI as a tool for digital art. And I think that it will balance out at some point, but like currently, you know, is if you prompt something, even if you spend some time on it, did you create it or did the computer create it? Like, is that actually your work of art? And then, you know, there's no, it's a open debate currently on how that all unfolds, but I think that there's a level of conviction with physical artwork that is really a beautiful and is in some ways currently I think that it will stand the test of time further and longer as far as the level of conviction someone has, like, and the proof of work they put into making a piece of artwork. And in a lot of ways, that is often what makes good art. Mm-hmm. Not always. Sometimes good art's just a good idea. But a lot of times it's the time someone spends with their human hand creating something, and the patience that takes is, I think, a big part of good artwork.
I agree. And I think it aligns with Bitcoin so much because of the scarcity there, and with time, you know, Bitcoin being time and our time, and then, you know, the time it takes you to create something in real life. And it's also proof of that work because it is something tangible, something in real life that, you know, that AI didn't create, because you actually see it in real life. It's not just online. So yeah, it fits the ethos of Bitcoin, the physical art, even though Bitcoin itself is not physically held, even though energy, you know what I mean? Like energy is real, you know, but it's just the idea that it's an internet based, you know, energy thing that's not something you hold in your hand. But then the physical art ties more with that than the digital art does, because of the, you know, the time spent really, and proof, you know, verification that it's real.
Absolutely. And it's not to say there isn't a lot of amazing digital art out there. There is, but with Bitcoin and with cryptocurrency in general, I think that, you know, a lot of the digital art, it's a slippery slope into just more shit coins. And, you know, having, you know, the ability to just to print JPEGs infinitely, instantly, and then just calling them art, you know, is a big is a big part of the problem with NFTs. Like I could make super cool NFTs, you know, all day long. It's just so easily, and it's just and just there's it's a you know, it's a few buttons and you're, you know, is it, you know, so it's, not that
the idea of having like a base of images and then these characteristics and these have these things that, you know what I mean? So you have like a, it's just like the whole, it's a programming thing, you know, you just program it to say, we want this many rare ones that have this feature, you know, and it's all based on the program. It just spits them out and then you have them like a money printer, right? It's just like you have them all just instantly. There's no time spent on that. It's like, besides coming up with the idea and putting it in a program.
Yeah. And I mean, it's the conviction, I think, is one of the biggest points. And that's, you know, if you have a piece of physical art, even a physical print that you printed, you have to store them somewhere. You have to pack them up. You have to ship them out. When people buy them, they know exactly what they're getting. They're agreeing and committing and having conviction in your art that they're going to have to go to the post office and pick it up and unpackage it. And now they're going to have to store it. And it's a physical thing in the real world that you have to deal with. And it takes a little bit more effort on both parts to sell even a physical print and to buy a physical print than to just sell or buy a JPEG on the internet. And, you know, there's like an impulse, I think an impulse part to it where, you know, are you selling it because someone likes the art and they like the way it looks or they like the way it makes them feel or they think it's beautiful and they want to decorate their home with it? Or is it an impulse buy because their friend told them that it's going to be worth a lot of money and they should buy this JPEG and there's no conviction necessary other than clicking a button? And people love buying things. So, and people love gambling and, you know, they love speculation. So there's, you know, it's definitely different selling a physical print versus selling a digital print in the form of an NFT, you know, especially when it's done under the guise of some sort of speculative, you know, assumption. So,
yeah, exactly. And I think that when people have appreciation for the artist themselves, for their principles and their ethos, and again, the time they spent doing something, it's almost like you want to purchase something off of that artist because you appreciate the time they spend. You know, it's something that you're supporting, you know, their work and their craft and their ability to continue creating, because so that's why it's nice to support artists that you care about, because you're actually feeling like you're connected to that piece because the artist is connected to it physically. But when you buy something online, you're you know, or even if you could just, I just always thought it was funny that when people are buying digital art like NFTs, it's just they really did a good job at convincing people that these things are so valuable because you could verify it's on a blockchain. But the idea that you could just screenshot it and see, you know, I have it too, you know, it's like, oh, okay, but it's not verified on the blockchain. Okay, but I still have a photo of the same exact thing on my computer, you know, so it's just funny how you could just copy that, you know, and paste somewhere else and send it to a million people. But just because it's not connected to the blockchain, that, you know, it's like they got you. They really made people believe in this stuff. And I just don't know what's going to happen with that stuff later. But I just don't think none of that stuff is money. And none of that stuff is, I mean, not none of that stuff is art. Like we said, you know, there are some people creating some incredible things, like culture. You know, I think for me, it's when you think of slop, you think of, you know, the fast made things. But when you think of Bitcoin culture, what I like about some of the AI music and certain things that people make is that it allows people who aren't musicians, but they have so many, like a musical part of them that they want to express in some way, and they are passionate about something like Bitcoin, they can create music to express themselves. And it's culture, you know, so that's, even though some things digitally can be slop, I think anytime it has culture behind it, anytime it has time spent and it's not something quick, it just strengthens Bitcoin because people are putting their emotions into stuff.
Absolutely. Mm-hmm. Absolutely. From the beginning of what you said there, as far as the right click save of digital art, or of let's say JPEGs, at least static digital art, it's really interesting because it brings into question ownership, which is a very fascinating topic to Bitcoiners and anybody interested in Bitcoin and what makes a good form of money. And you know, if you can right click save it, who really owns it, you know? And that's something that is, you know, so value is subjective, and it kind of makes ownership subjective when you talk about who owns the NFT. Because if I have the exact same copy, but I just don't have the signature and the hash verifying it on a blockchain, then, you know, according to me, I could say I own it. You know, I have the exact same photo, and maybe to the person who actually has the underlying token attached to it, they're like, well, no, you don't own it because you don't own the token, you don't own the hash, you don't have the cryptographic proof that you own it. But then, what is ownership then? Is it just an agreement? And then it's okay, well, who what blockchain is it attached to, and what group of people agree that that blockchain defines true ownership of the, you know, digital object? So right. where Bitcoin's not like that. Like mm-hmm. Bitcoin, we all agree that if you have, you know, the private key to an address on the time chain, then you can prove that you own that address, and it's, you know, but it's fungible, and it's fungible, and it's numerical. And so it's proving that you own a set of numbers, which is something interesting about Bitcoin, is that it kind of, you know, make a long story short, it kind of proves and points out that a blockchain's only really good as a monetary ledger so far, and nobody's been able to figure out a better use case or a different use case for it that's, you know, at least very useful or valid. Mm-hmm. Because it's not it's only useful ultimately as a monetary ledger to
right.
keep who owns what numbers, and that's that, you know. And
yes,
they've tried, you know, but there's a reason that the, you know, the state, the government, or you know, businesses aren't, you know, for the most part using blockchain technology to prove ownership of like a vehicle or of a house title. And you know, maybe someday they will. I know there are some cases out there, but the only ones I've ever found were privatized blockchains, which were like in shipping logistics stuff. And I've looked it up because I've had this conversation with many people, and the only blockchains using, or companies using blockchain technology, they're private blockchains. They're not actually decentralized blockchains, which is really interesting. So it kind of just goes to show that, you know, so far, the only thing that a decentralized blockchain is good for is a monetary ledger. So
yeah, because when you think about it being, you know, from a logistics standpoint, a company's just doing it to verify their own things within a company, because nobody outside of that company is going to believe that they're being truthful, really. It's just a way for them maybe to track things. So yes, for logistics. But yeah, if you're the only one that can control and you own the way to change things or alter things if you choose to, yeah, no one's going to use that as trust, you know.
Yeah.
Knowing that somebody has ultimate control over it.
Yeah.
You know, so it is a very, very interesting idea. And that's why it's sort of, I love that you said that. How do you prove the ownership? Because I could just make a wallpaper on my desktop with every Bored Ape that was sold for the most amount of money and just be like, look, I own them all. And unless I show them proof on the blockchain that they're mine, but I could just say they are, and people might believe me, and people would probably be like, wow, you know, I'll spread a rumor just like you spread your Michael Saylor photo and be like, look, I have all of these and they're all mine. I just bought them. And you know what I mean? How do they know which address? I could just say it and people will buy it. And that'll be my thing. So you know what I mean? It's like anyone could say anything and pretend. And you could also spam out. It's like, for what? Just because I could email a photo of something that somebody paid millions of dollars for to like a million other people, just because it's connected to some blockchain, is just, I don't know. It's crazy how people bought into it. Like,
Yeah.
I mean, I fell for it for some time, you know, and it's like, and never again. That's why I wear my hoodie, you know, because I'm determined to never fall for things, even though I did fall for your AI thing. But I'm determined. I'm not doing it. I don't care. I don't want those things anymore. I just want, I want real stuff. I want verifiable things. I want money on the blockchain that I want. Bitcoin, you know, Bitcoin is a set of numbers that you can verify. Yes, that's ownership. But yeah, the art stuff, it's very hard when it comes to blockchains and all these different chains. And there's just so much manipulation. And it's like when something doesn't make sense, it should be a signal to people. You know what I mean? Like if you're just thinking, maybe I just don't understand it. But when you think how obvious it is that if there's a picture that I could just, if I can't right click and save it, I could just screenshot it and I'll have it too. You know, then it's like, so what makes this special? Well, that's the question. And that's really just an obvious red flag. That's just weird to you that you can't wrap your head around because it's not a real thing. And I think that's just, it's just funny.
There's a reason that so far I don't think there's, or there's very, very few NFT projects that are, you know, if any at all, that are up against Bitcoin, that are in the green. You know, most of them go to zero or go to, you know, zero in relation to whatever they, you know, were at their peak of their hype and time. Like, how long are there any that have lasted a really long time? And same for any kind of blockchain token or anything, you know, that is out there, other than speculative gambling, which is kind of funny. Like Solana, Ethereum, and like the reason they're, you know, still at times doing well or pushing is because they have a gambling economy built around them. But I, you know, with the Oracle problem, I haven't found any utility or you know, true utility token out there that's like currently doing well, that's doing something, other than some ones that are centralized, privatized blockchains that have a token for like logistics or something, or I think there's like a medical one out there. I don't know. The proof is in the pudding, you know. So
it's almost like, you know, the stock market was like the gambling that they would allow kind of in real life, you know, but then now, you know, gambling was always, you know, with casinos and things, it was always had to be legal in certain areas. It was never just, oh, you had to have approval for a casino or something. But now I'm kind of amazed how normalized or how they're normalizing gambling so much. When you think of all the sports betting stuff that goes on, you see ads on TV for every single thing, like DraftKings, you know, celebrities promoting all these betting things. And it's like, you already have the lottery, you know, you already have, now you're doing sports betting, normalizing that. So it's just like crypto, you know, the crypto casino, which Bitcoin isn't the same. And I have to like fight all the time. Like I'm a hairdresser, so I talk to real people, and they know I do a podcast, so they come at me with XRP, and I'm like, please don't, you know. So I have to like, I feel like I'm on the battleground defending Bitcoin's honor and trying to explain to them that it's different. But it's that, it's like people are so like, they're just normalizing gambling so much when it comes to just crypto or NFTs and sports betting and all this stuff.
It's very, very, very forth turning, apocalyptic times, and very much, you know, bread and circuses. And you know, it's crazy watching it in real time. So,
Yeah, that is so true. It's that I'm glad that you connected that, because that's what it feels like, craziness. It feels like a circus. Yeah. Like, why is this? I just don't like the same way that I couldn't wrap my head around why you would find value in something you could just screenshot. I think it's crazy how gambling is so just normal now, like to people, like that is just like, oh, I'm doing DraftKings too. It's just, I can't understand. And that's what makes sense, is that fourth turning vibes, you know. It feels like people are just trying to like, what do I have to lose? I might as well try doing this, you know, either lose everything, which I'm already in a dark hole, or I'll maybe make some money, you know. So I think that's what they got people doing. It's kind of insane.
Absolutely insane. And it's, you know, it's not new, us having this conversation, and people have been pointing it out and connecting these dots for a long time now. But I mean, with them taking the penny out of circulation, You know, that's a first, extraordinarily tangible daily life sign and symptom of hyperinflation, where they're beginning to alter the currency that we use. Mm-hmm. So here, you know, in the U.S., it costs too much, or costs more than it's worth to produce an actual physical piece of currency. Is pretty crazy that all went down and is happening right now, and we're seeing that. And then, you know, you see the gambling and the, you know, the OnlyFans epidemic, and the, you know, it's one symptom after another. And mm-hmm. I think a lot of, you know, over the last 20, 30, 40 years, a lot of people have pointed different things out and have been doing all kinds of, you know, good work and fighting the good fight and so forth. But now more than ever, we're seeing them, you know, it coalesce to a point of undeniability, where it's like, well, they actually took money out of circulation because of inflation. Like, that is a real sign of, like, when do we get another zero? When do we start adding zeros on our bills of paper? And
yeah, I think it's great. I think that too, like, oh, how are more people not thinking this is a really big deal? Like, I think it's a really big deal that they removed the penny from circulation, because yes, like, people think that the US dollar is safe and we're fine here in the US, you know, and the rest of the country should worry because their dollars are maybe not good, but we're okay. That's literally, it should be scary to people, you know, yeah. But they don't think it's that big of a deal. They're like, who cares? It's just the penny. But yeah. That's, you know, that's like the first step. And then how long before we get the nickel and the, you know, I mean,
yeah.
It's like we're just going to get rid of change, because what's the point of having change when everything costs so much? You know, it's like, why even bother? You know, and I just, I mean, that's the crazy part, is like, when you're a Bitcoiner, you understand inflation and you understand what it does to currencies and collapsing. And then this is the start of it, and it should be more of a alarm bell for people. So I'm glad that you mentioned that. But also, even when you brought up the OnlyFans thing, it's the same idea as slop, but for intimacy, you know, it's like, really, because you're not having a real connection, a real in-person connection. You're not having emotion connected to a relationship. You're just, you know, internet slop relationship, you know, sort of thing. Yeah. And you're just paying for connection with somebody. And it's kind of like, again, another sad thing where you think about gambling being so normalized, and you know what I mean, internet like connection like that is so normalized, and it's very strange, and it's I don't know, like, I'm sure it's a lot of people that do it, you know, and it's crazy because I'm sure there's a lot of more women that do it than men, but I'm sure a lot of guys are doing it too. But it's just kind of, I mean, when you don't have when you feel like you don't have a choice and you think, this is a good option for me, people are making lots of money, you're like selling your soul or your dignity for something that's going to be ever depreciating.
Yeah. And is extremely inflationary with more and more people doing it. And I think you really hit it on the head there with it's the seeking of connection. And it's being a symptom of the lack of disconnection in our lives. And it's interesting, and it's a testament to that, the fact that OnlyFans has been as successful as it has. Like, why would you pay for pornography? There's just an infinite amount of it for free on the internet. Why are people paying for it? And it can only be because the way they've set it up with, like, the, you know, like, user generated content and being able to, like, you know, chat with people or chat with, you know, OnlyFans creators is fulfilling a need for intimacy and for connection beyond just utilizing, you know, pornographic images to, you know, for sexual release, which is really, really interesting. Cause sometimes it's, you know, there's definitely, you know, like, it's like who's paying for all of this only, like, who's paying for porn? You can just, there's free porn on the internet. Like, why are people paying for it? And I think that explains why they pay for it. And then on the flip side of it, you have this, you know, collapse of an economy through inflation and, you know, more every day looking more and more like hyperinflation, and a level of desperation. And so, you know, got more young women than ever turning to digital, you know, digital prostitution, digital stripping, to make ends meet, to fulfill their base needs. And it's very concerning.
It is very concerning because it's like a base layer destruction of society. Cause then you have all these guys who are trying to date a girl who's got an OnlyFans page, and they are just supposed to sit back and be okay that they're doing whatever it is they're doing on that page for money. And it's like, you just have to sit back and be okay with that. That's not an okay feeling.
No.
So it kind of destroys relationships too. So you can't have normal relationships. And if you do, it's just normalizing a lot of weird things. Like people can just, like, I get people have different things, but it's just like normalizing so much of that, you know, that people just have to put their feelings aside and disconnect. As much as people are looking for connection by going to sites like this, then there's people that are in these relationships that have to, in real life, disconnect from people they could be in a relationship with, because they have to be able to almost like not let it bother them, you know, because that isn't something I think that's natural to just be okay with. You know, and then it's just something that, I don't know, it's more and more, it sucks more people into it because of the desperation too. So then when they hear more and more people are making money, then more people do it. And then it's kind of a breakdown in like how people find each other. And the other thing I was thinking when you said why, you know, how we mentioned the emotional connection. I've never, you know, been to a strip club, but like I've heard about how, like, you know, the idea of like somebody giving, you know, money to a stripper and then them thinking, oh, she really likes me. And it's like, no, it's because you're paying her, you know. So, but they get that feeling of connection because they're giving money. So then they're going to sites like this instead of looking at a free website. They're actually thinking like, she's spending time with me. She really likes me. It's like, no, because you're paying her a lot and she's giving you her time. So it's not real, you know, it's just like, because you're paying for something, but they feel good about themselves. It makes them feel, like they're getting time from someone they admire or they like, you know, so it's just crazy.
It's really crazy. And when you combine it all together, the speculative gambling, the seeking, you know, the desperation for money to meet one's base needs, combined with the people seeking the connection, and you know, it's a very interesting, very, very scary and conspirical time that we're living in. And all of the, I was going to try and avoid saying it, but you know, with the Epstein files, as far as they've now been released, is pretty crazy. And it's interesting. I definitely,
I don't really totally keep up with it because I'm kind of just bored with the fact that they keep saying that they're going to release the files and that they don't. So they're just protecting people on both sides of the political party, you know, because, you know, the last administration could have released it and they didn't. This one could have released it and they didn't. And it's just kind of at this point, it's like you're just all protecting each other and you're all a bunch of like evil people that are doing horrible things. So it just sickens me that people still defend some of these politicians to no end, you know, and it's like, you still, like, I would have more respect for somebody if they just released it, you know what I mean? Let people know, like, let them all sink, go under, you know?
Yeah. Well, so right now, I don't know how much time you've been spending on Twitter, but they've just released a lot of them, at least.
Really?
Yeah, so it's right now, Twitter's been pretty crazy. If you go scroll a bit, you'll see it. You can go look it up though, but there's a bunch of like OG, there's a bunch of OG Bitcoiners that are like in the files. Yeah. And so they've released a huge batch of them. I don't know if it's the entire, I don't think it's like the entirety of them. Like it's a redacted set of them.
Yeah.
It's kind of this like thing that they've been doing where I think a while back they released a bunch redacted and they've, you know,
but why even redact stuff?
Like, I think it was like 3 million files or 3 million correspondences, files, photos, and like so emails right now. And so people are like, it's crazy right now.
What I wonder is, out of all this time we've been waiting, okay, and I don't know how many people's names are that I know of, but all, like, first of all, why the redactions? Why not just put them out there? Second of all, why, after waiting all of these years for names on a list, now that, like, I just think there's so much manipulation because the fear about Bitcoin and the fear about the dollar tanking, and then everyone was moving to metals. Now those have tanked, you know, a bit. So it's just like, there's so, everybody's trying to like play their chess game, you know, but Bitcoin's going to win, you know. But I just think that why not redact the Bitcoiner names? Why are you releasing those names and not the rest?
Yeah.
You know, are you specifically trying to be like, look how bad Bitcoin is? There's all these evil people that are using Bitcoin to pay Epstein for terrible things. You know, is that like the narrative that's going on? Because there's definitely more. I'm sure there's lots more than just Bitcoiners. I'm just saying, like, why after all this time, now we get them during, I always think about timing.
Yeah. Like, what are they distracting us from right now? Absolutely. Yeah. It's crazy. Like, I don't know. I haven't, you know, life is busy. I'm not a full-time investigative journalist, but what else is going on right now? Because why suddenly do they release them as much as they have? And then absolutely. I've seen a bunch of people asking that, like, you know, like the redaction they've done on this batch they've released is very interesting. Like, it doesn't fully make sense, like what's redacted and what's not redacted. And then, you know, people are like, they've had like 2 years with these, like, we have no idea like how much of them this is, or what they've taken out, or what they've done. Like, they've been totally doctored. So it's a total, you know, it's just absolutely another psyop. Like, here they are. Like, that's not all of them and everything. And so,
well, isn't it also hilarious that there was that photo where they were all holding up a binder, like, Epstein files, we got them. And then all of a sudden you hear, however long later, like a few months later, they're like, I don't know if the president said it or whatever, but it's like, there are no files. Why does everyone keep talking about the files? And it's like, dude, we saw everyone holding the binder and they were proud to show that they have these files. But then what was that, a media stunt that they even had binders full of empty papers? Or are there no files, but now you're coming out with them, so there actually were?
That's pretty crazy, that tweet a while, not long ago, where Trump was like, there are no files. That's pretty crazy.
Yeah. Like, think back to that. Be like, dude, now you're coming out. All of these files that you just dumped out on the internet, I thought you said there weren't any.
Yeah.
And I thought you were trying to tell everybody when they brought up his name being in them. I thought it was like, why does everyone keep talking about this? They're not even real. There are no files. It's like, are you trying to just shift away blame from yourself and get attention on other people? Because maybe the redacted me. I mean,
the gaslighting is unreal at this point.
Seriously.
It's right up there with the gambling and the degeneracy, the hedonistic degeneracy. And it's like the gaslighting. And
That's why I don't believe it unless nothing is redacted and you just give out everything you know. Because, I mean, when there was those rumors, or not rumors, but they even, like, I don't know, SNL even had skits about it. But about Trump being in the files recently and what they were saying about him, it was kind of like, I think the jokes are hilarious. Like, you can't not laugh at things that come out, because I just, again, I'm not politically one way or the other. I'm a Bitcoiner, you know, so I don't really care. I think it's all a bunch of manipulation. So I'm more wary of people who just, they side with one group of thinking and they think their side is never wrong. And I'm like, there can be people that you think are the people you associate with that are also doing bad stuff, you know? So there's Bitcoiners, look, that are in these files that are doing bad stuff. You know what I mean? So it's like, I guess I have to check that out. That's insane. But I'm also annoyed that, the gaslighting continues. We're not satisfied with this type of information and with the distraction away from, you know, going from the fact that there are none. There are no files. Don't think about my name being in there, because that's all made up stuff. But then when there are other people, it's like, look, these are legit because I said so.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah.
I don't know. It's crazy.
There is no red. There is no blue. There is the state and there is you. So.
Yeah. And what is going on right now that they're distracting us from? There's the Venezuela takeover. There's Greenland that the U.S. wants to purchase. The dollar is not trusted, you know, they're moving into metals, you know, people are globally, things are shifting and nobody's wondering about the penny, you know, it's like crazy.
What about the penny?
I know, it's like, I want to go out there and just be like, I think we were looking it up the other day too, because this is something that I don't know how more people don't think about, but I think I heard that there are more pennies than any other coin in the US combined, like way more in circulation, even though the value of them is a fraction of all of the rest.
Yeah.
And a lot of them are just like missing or, you know, sitting in people's cars or jars.
Somewhere.
Yeah. I don't know. It's like, but I think it's when you get rid of a penny, it's not long after that you start getting rid of all the other coins, because what's the point of using all these things?
Yeah.
Nobody wants to use them.
Yeah. Yeah. It's we've got where it's definitely not boring, I'll say that much. And
yeah.
So we got some interesting time ahead. Often it definitely makes one want to go live in a little hut in the jungle by the beach somewhere. Never go online ever again.
I know. I've never thought like going to, you know, El Salvador sounded so good. You know, yeah. I just totally want to go to a place that embraces Bitcoin fully, and I could just, and if they start to not embrace it, I could just pick up and move to another place. I don't mind being a nomad at that point, just like living where I feel. But this is just, and it's just one of those things that knowing that you appreciate Bitcoin culture and you're showcasing Bitcoin culture in the magazine, and you want, you know, truth, money that is based on truth, art that is based on truth, and culture that is real. It's like you're not falling for this fake culture, fake emotion, fake connection, you know, stuff that you're seeing, and it's sucking so many people into it and distracting them. So I am glad you brought that up, because it's a very interesting conversation. And now I have to check it out to see who's, even though I'm annoyed that it's not fully, you know, it's very redacted and a lot of stuff isn't showing, I'm also interested.
Yeah. The show goes on.
Yeah.
So, yeah. Careful though. I wasn't seeing it, and then somebody told me, and I was like, oh shit, this was like yesterday. And then I was like, let me look it up on my Twitter. And now, you know, it's just all that I see on my Twitter feed.
Oh, no. See, and there's another thing. I don't like these feeds lately.
No, they're bad.
Right?
Bad. It's really bad. You got to go to the little following and then recent. And, like, you got to go to following and then not only go to following, but you've got to set following to most recent. Because even the following tab has, like, a popularity algorithm. So you're not seeing it in chronological order.
I really haven't been doing it that way. And I want to know... I'm going to do that because I can't stand the algorithm lately. And sometimes I want to see things that are outside of my following box of life online.
Yeah.
But I can't stand that section anymore. I only see like paid. It seems like things that are just boosted, and I don't see any of the people I follow hardly. And, and it really is annoying me to the point that I just want to fully move to Noster and use Club Orange for connection. That's what I've been talking about lately.
Hell yeah. Shout out Club Orange.
Yes, I love it. And I've been trying to encourage people lately to get on there and actually try to go to a meetup, because I've met the coolest people. And even though I don't think of myself, I love talking to people here. You know, I talk at my job, but usually it's not like I want to go out but I end up, you know, having a good time when I meet people in real life, especially Bitcoiners. It's the best time. And I've met some of the coolest people through this, through Club Orange. And some people, I think I've heard maybe one person so far since I've been sharing about it, talk about the paywall, or maybe two people, I don't know. But that's what's great about it. Because when you have a paywall, you block out people that are going to try to NFT you and, you know, shitcoin you and stuff like that.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. Shout out Club Orange. Crazy times, crazy, crazy, crazy times, but we're fighting the good fight here, and Bitcoin Army going strong.
Yes. Thank you. Shout out to the Bitcoin Army.
Shout out Bitcoin Army. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. And that's the other thing. We're trying to just connect, you know, we're staying connected. That's the whole point. It's like, you know, we want to see each other's thoughts and ideas and, you know, try to connect in real life. Physical things are, you know, I don't know. It's like when you meet people in real life, it's actually more connection and more real friendships. And I just wanted to also share before we go, I wanted to share your post where I saw someone flipping through your book, because I don't flip through it as nicely. It's not going to look as good. You know, it's just terrible. So this, I just wanted to share with people. So this is Bitcoin Art Magazine. If I can do my window here. I thought this was a really cool post. They were just sharing like your, if I can get it to play, there we go. That wasn't totally from the beginning, but this is just a little preview of what's inside the magazine and, you know, real artwork, real people creating this stuff in real life. And, you know, it's just beautiful. And, oh, I have my version here. I was reading it before you came in. So this is my version. So thank you so much. And it's just, I don't know. It's beautiful. It's literally, thank you for making this, you know? Thank you. Absolutely. And look, you it's can been tell a- not AI generated because you could read Genesis if you zoom in on this one. So, yeah, this is so, so amazing. And anyone who's part of this, it's like you're part of history. This is like a history book of culture.
It's been a labor of love. And it is. It's an archive. It's a curated archive, but it's an archive of a time and space and a bunch of really amazing creations and artworks that, you know, have come out of all of this. So
yeah, for sure. Sorry, my camera was like totally facing down after I showed the
No, you're good.
But yeah, it's a great, I mean, it's like the time chain, and then you have a physical, you know, visual of the time people spent creating stuff for Bitcoin, you know. So it's just like a really cool connection, and I don't know, like a piece of history, you know. So it's really amazing. I love that it's called Genesis Edition too. So check out Bitcoin Art Magazine. Check out Asanoa and see. I'm gonna link everything in this video, so check out in the description, and I'll have some pin posts to check out down below. But thank you for joining me for part two. This has been a really interesting conversation. I am definitely going to check out some of the stuff we talked about, but I'm not going to let myself get sucked in and, you know, spend all day on this stuff, because I don't want to, but I'm
don't
curious.
Do it.
Yeah.
There's of all the crazy things going on right now, there's absolutely nothing that I've seen that's going to make your life any better. So right.
Yeah. Someone give me the Cliff Notes version. Yeah. That'll, you know, like, and I am definitely switching my feed over to do the most recent on the following tab. I suggest everyone do that. Thank you for the tip. And hopefully that, you know, makes me feel better on X, because X is being weird too. It's like,
been weird lately. It's not, they changed it. That algorithm changed. They did something. They're up to something.
Yeah, I'm glad that you say that too. Anyone I've mentioned it to lately, even the in-person meetup, I've mentioned it, and they felt the same way, the way you're reacting.
Yeah.
The same way they reacted. And I'm like, thank God it's not just me, because I was almost feeling like a little bit alienated. Not that I like need engagement on my post, but I'm just, it's either I'm not getting engagement or I'm not seeing my friends' stuff. And I think, are they just kind of like offline for a few days, or what's going on? But like, I don't see stuff that I would want to see. So it's very strange. So I'm glad that everyone else thinks it's weird too, because it's not just me.
No, they absolutely destroyed engagement with the, I think it was end of December.
Okay.
Algorithm change. The engagement got absolutely wrecked. They changed the entire way. I think it's all run by AI now.
Right.
Level. And so it's, the engagement's terrible compared to what it was just before the change.
Right.
And the For You feed's absolute garbage. And it's the same thing they did with Instagram. Well, I think it was when Meta bought Instagram. They just changed it to exactly as you said, all paid promotion stuff, or it's like all contentious, like viral kind of stuff, like just so clickbaity and not entirely relevant to, you know, what maybe I am actually interested in, which is weird, because that's like the whole point is like they want to tailor it to what you're interested in. And I'm like, well, stop feeding me stuff I'm not interested in that's clickbaity, because then I click on it and then you show me more of that.
And you just said you just looked up the Epstein stuff and then your feed was full of Epstein.
Yeah, that's all it is now.
Insane. Wow. Like, how crazy. So yeah, this is definitely not in our heads. We are not being paranoid about it. This is actually happening to more people and they notice it.
Yeah, big shout out to Noster. So
yes, Noster. And that's,
don't forget to spend some time on Noster.
I know, that's what we have to do. We have to spend more time on Noster, because sometimes people will go over there and post one random thing and never show up for months. But I think if we all just start showing like our protest for this controlled algorithm by just spending time where we know it's not manipulated, then we'll be happier too. It's not just we're protest. We're just actually going to see things from people that we follow. So I agree. Noster, Club Orange, Bitcoin Art Magazine.
Bitcoin Art Magazine.
Yes.
Let's go. Yeah.
Thank you so much. It was so nice seeing you again. And I look forward to seeing you if you're going to be at the conference in Vegas. I'll be there. I don't know if you're going to be there.
Well, we're hoping to be there. It's not confirmed yet, but very possibly. And then otherwise, let's do another episode later on this year. Maybe come on my show as I get it more and more.
That's polished. Another thing. Yes. Yeah, sorry. Check out his YouTube channel. I'm going to link that too. I wanted to talk about the YouTube channel too, but we took all these turns. So I am so happy. I would love to join you.
Yeah, come and hang out. I'm kind of starting with the artists in the magazine, you know, they're right there, but I'm planning on, you know, talking to everybody and anybody in the Bitcoin space who's good people. So
awesome. Yeah. Looking forward to it whenever you want, and just reach out to me, and later in the year is good for you joining me too.
Awesome.
All right. Have a great day. Take care.
Likewise. Thank you.